Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. Brief at ease. Back on record, let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:17 p.m. on Monday, May 13, 2019. Before we begin, I would like to thank Robert Montenegro, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Eric Heinbigner from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. This time I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present day we have Representative Eastman, Representative Wool, Representative Thompson, Representative Shaw, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first in order, only order of business today is Senate Bill 83, Telecommunications Regulations and Exemptions, sponsored by Senator Birch. This is the hearing of first hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. Here to present the bill will be Christine O'Connor, Executive Director of the Alaska Telecom Association. We also have Senator Birch and Kim Skipper, staff to Senator Birch. And if so, first I'll invite Senator Birch and his staff to come up and make any introductory remarks they would like to make. And then we will bring up Ms. O'Connor to present the bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Clayman and members of the House Judiciary Committee. Thank you for hearing SB 83 at this late date in the session. For the record, Chris Birch, State Senator from District M in South Anchorage. SB 83 seeks to encourage investment and innovation in the telecommunications industry by updating the telecommunications statute regarding landlines and long-distance services. Rapid changes in technology and the Federal Communications Commission regulations render portions of the existing statutes obsolete and/or inefficient in the modern telecommunications world. As consumers continue to prefer broadband and mobile services, the demand for landline services decreases. SB 83 places service providers on a more level playing field and will encourage deployment of advanced technologies and more efficient network design. SB 83 creates new protections for rural areas and requires landline and long-distance rates, terms, and conditions be treated the same as larger communities within a geographic area. SB 83 also requires the regulatory cost charge be assessed and submitted to the RCA for all telecommunications utilities. Currently, the RCC is not being paid by utilities that are municipally owned or are cooperatives, and that is about half the utilities. SB 83 adds utilities analyst masters employed in a professional capacity by the Regulatory Commission to the list of exempt services under the State Personnel Act and gives the chair of the Regulatory Commission the authority to hire up to 5 utilities analyst masters. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present SB 83, and I would appreciate the committee's support. With me is our staff, Kim Skipper, and she's available to go through changes to the bill, and Christine O'Connor, immediately behind me, from the Alaska Telecom Association, with a presentation and to help answer any questions the committee might have. And Chair Clayman, if you'd like, we do have a presentation queued up, but whatever your pleasure is.
So I think what we'll do is we'll get the presentation first, and then from after the presentation, we'll get the changes from one version to the next.
Perfect.
I think it'll make more sense if we get the initial presentation.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Christine O'Connor. I am the Executive Director of Alaska Telecom Association. Thank you very much for being here this afternoon to hear about SB 83, an important bill that would help to streamline regulations not only for industry but also for the Regulatory Commission. As a prelude, I'll just say that this bill is only about landline service. So as we go through, everything I'm talking about is about landlines or long-distance service accessed through landlines. SB 83 has unanimous support within industry. ATA's members are the broadband wireless landline providers of Alaska. So the reason we're here is because the statutes related to telecommunications in Alaska, many of them are almost 50 years old. That is very outdated when you think about the status and the changes that have happened to telecommunications technology. In 1996, the Federal Telecom Act began a sweeping change to our industry, starting to the process of deregulation and also inserting competition into the market. Landline, since that time, landline and long distance use has dramatically reduced. Long distance revenues were $64 million in 2006, and by last year they were down to $13 million. Landline service is still very important, and SB 83 does not remove any protections from landline service. This is a very important service we provide. 48% of Alaskans still retain their landlines. And this is critical service and very important customers to my members. However, the regulations that remain and statutes are driving a lot of inefficiencies. 41 other states have reduced regulation. This looks different. It's different state by state. So in many states, they actually eliminated regulation. We are not doing that here. SB 83 is not a deregulation bill. Instead, it strips away the wasteful provisions that are continuing to use very scarce resources from industry and for the commission. Mechanically, the bill is structured to exempt from AS 4205. However, critical sections are retained, and I'll go into a little more detail on each of these in future slides. Rate regulation is a traditional monopoly function that the commission performs for what I think of as old school cost-based utilities, so think electric utilities, where there is no competition and where it is important that the regulator keep an eye on what's going on in great detail. Telecommunications is not that way anymore. We have looked, and 99% of Alaskans have options of where they can purchase their telecommunications. Traditional landline service is not their only option. But this bill has important protections for landline rates. Federal rules cap landline rates, and that cap is calculated and readjusted every year, and companies must certify that they have not gone above that federal cap for their landline rate. We have added a new section to the bill, 381L, which requires every company to provide the uniform rate, service, and terms across their entire service area. This is how we operate today. It is more efficient, it's less confusing for consumers, but to give further protection to rural areas, we're putting it in statute with SB 83. One of the other changes to the bill is to add authority to the commission to designate eligible telecommunications carriers. The FCC has delegated this role to the commission. However, we're placing it in statute to make that explicit. The reason this is important is this eligible telecommunications carrier designation is what allows a company to participate in the federal universal service funding programs, which are very important to service in Alaska. The bill eliminates carrier of last resort designations. This carrier of last resort regulations were adopted when the commission created an explicit funding stream to support them. Those went into effect in 2010. However, the obligations to serve a designated area, to continue to serve unless you're given permission to leave by the regulatory commission, those obligations, those duties, were already contained in the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity each company has been granted by the regulatory commission. So the COLR regulations are duplicative to the duties that flow under a company's certificate, which allows them to operate in the state. So the bill strips out the COLR regulations, but retains the stronger certificate statutes. And the bill cleans up the regulatory cost charge. The RCA is self-funded through a small charge on all utilities bills, except in telecom, due to the age of our statutes, cooperatives are not allowed to assess this fee. Therefore, customers of all the other telephone companies are paying for, they're paying for the full weight of activity at the RCA. The bill changes that and says all telecommunications utilities will participate in this mechanism to fund the oversight that the RCA does. I touched on already federal rules. There are strong rate protections. There's the federal rules, the new subsection requiring uniform not only rates but also terms and conditions. And then Federal Lifeline Program supports low-income subscribers, and they can get either a landline or a wireless service, usually for a cost under $5. The couple fees apply to that. The reason we want to eliminate rate regulation or these tariff filings is because it's a very uneven playing field. Not only does it waste resources, but companies are treated differently, even in the same markets. Cooperatives today, they don't file tariff filings. They don't have to tell the commission what their rates are. They manage that with themselves. They post it on their websites. They respond to the market and their consumers. However, private companies do not have a path to be relieved of these filing obligations. But it is a bit misleading to say that we have rate regulation today, because companies, the private companies, can also change their rates in most cases at will without approval of the regulatory commission, but they still have to make a filing. So this is where we have a paper shuffle going back and forth, where the company wants to change its rate and they say they file what's called an informational filing with the commission, which takes effect immediately. The commission does not approve it, takes effect automatically, but we have this paper shuffle back and forth. It's wasteful. The commission itself has called it work without value and a blizzard of paper. So we would eliminate that with this bill. There are situations in a minority of small, about 10% of the population is still served in an area where the company must file a more traditional tariff filing, telling the commission what the rate will be, going into detail, sometimes intricate detail, and which would trigger a docket of over 2 years. Remember, all related to landline rates. We would eliminate that. However, the protection of requiring uniform rates across those areas, I think, offers a lot of reassurance that there will not be negative impacts in those areas. Commissioner Pickett testified at an earlier hearing that the last proceeding to look at some kind of in-depth rate change, the last one he remembers was in 2008. So this kind of oversight and detailed rate activity is not, it's a thing of the past due to the changes in industry. This just an anecdote from one of my larger members. They have thousands of pages of tariff filings. They did a web study saying how many people were looking at these tariff filings, at these tariffs on their website, and it was 0.005%. And the joke we made amongst ourselves is it's probably us looking at each other's tariffs. They are very intricate. They are heavily laden with industry jargon. I find some of them incomprehensible, and I've been in industry almost 20 years. So we would like to eliminate the mandate to keep maintaining these at the commission. And this would also free up the commission to focus on other more important matters. One of the important protections and powers of the commission is this ability to designate an eligible telecommunications carrier. You may be aware that there are significant funds that flow into the state from something called the Universal Service Fund. This is critical funding to allow us to have modern telecommunications networks. A company may not participate in those programs without this designation from the commission. And so the bill makes it explicit that the Regulatory Commission will continue to be the body that authorizes those initial designations and then requires annual reports, and the RCA submits certifications to the FCC that those funds are being properly used. A little more detail on carrier of last resort designations. As I said, these regulations are relatively recent. Before they were implemented in 2010, the Commission evaluated service in areas using their authority under the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. There's many dockets in the record showing that they had evaluated whether service needed to continue in a certain area, and sometimes the decision is yes, and sometimes the decision is no. The bar for making that decision is it in the public interest? And it is the Commission that decides, based on the situation and circumstances, whether it is in the public interest. The company brings the information. The Commission makes the evaluation and decision. And that does not change under SB 83. The Commission will continue to have that authority. As I mentioned, the regulatory cost charge is being fixed from its outdated condition today. And my members unanimously support this. Happy to go into more detail. Maybe I will leave that to see if there are questions about it. Consumer protection remains. You have all of the authority that the Commission has under the certificate. The authority that comes with being the certifier of federal funds. There's the new protection of uniform rates. The Regulatory Affairs and Public Advocacy Group works at the RCA as well, AG's Consumer Protection Unit, and the FCC's Consumer Complaint Center, which is distant but active. If a company receives a complaint that a consumer has filed at the FCC, they must respond within 10 days, and the FCC follows up. In a prior job, I used to respond to those complaints, and they are paying attention at the FCC. SB 83 maintains all of these protections. Not only are there benefits to industry, benefits in efficiency at the Commission, there are benefits to consumers. There's the new mandate that rates in remote areas will match rates in larger areas, which is the case today, and if this bill puts that into statute, that will continue going forward, guaranteed. It will allow us to be more nimble and respond more quickly to consumer preferences. Lets us focus resources on what the consumers wanted, and it fixes the RCC. So in summary, I will just say SB 83 will update statutes, streamline regulations. This is landline only. And we really appreciate your taking the time to hear a very technical and possibly dry subject, but something that would bring a lot of benefit were it to go forward.
Thank you very much. Questions for Ms. O'Connor, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. I was curious, now, what proportion of wireless providers in Alaska belong to ATA?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, all of the wireless providers are members of ATA.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
And through the chair, what exactly is the impact going to be on the co-ops when the rate increases?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, impact to the co-ops, I didn't catch the last part.
Well, you had mentioned that I think on slide 12, the regulatory cost change and shifting those to the cooperative members. What can you quantify that impact?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, thank you, I understand. It will spread that regulatory cost charge, which is a few cents on every bill, so it will spread it across a broader base, so they will pick up a few cent charge to fund the RCA's activity. We have not tried to quantify what that will be. That charge is calculated through regulations that are already in place that are very simple. They take the cost of the activity on that utility sector at the Regulatory Commission, divide it by the revenue that all of the carriers provide, and just calculate a flat percentage. So it's a very small charge. The cooperatives do support adding this provision to the bill.
Follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
And are the cooperative members, you know, when you say members, I mean, I assume you mean members of ATA, correct?
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
Okay. And follow up one more?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair, so I'm curious to know, have you talked with those members? Do you know how they intend to deal with the increased costs? Are they going to take that internally, or is that going to be passed on to the consumer?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the way the statute is written, it is assessed to the consumer.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions from Ms. O'Connor? If we could then have Representative Burt's staff come forward and tell us about the changes from the original version to the version in front of us. Ms. Skipper. Welcome.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is Kim Skipper, staff to Senator Chris Birch of Senate District M. In House Labor and Commerce, there was a couple changes made. One was to the title. The following has been added to the title to conform to the changes, and it inserts on page 1, line 4, it inserts after services relating to exempt employees. And then on the second change is changes to sections 2 and 3. They have been retitled. Section 2 now amends 39.25.110 of the State Personnel Act to add utility analyst masters to the list of exempt service personnel. And that can be found on page 2, lines 3 through page 5, line 12. It's an extensive act or section. And then section 3 change, it amends AS 42.05.141, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, to provide the authority to the commission chair to employ up to 5 utility analyst masters. And that can be found on page 5, lines 17 through 18. And the rest of the bill has just been renumbered to conform to the new version. You.
Any other? Questions about the changes. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. These 5 employees, are these existing employees that are having basically a position is changing, or are these 5 brand new positions?
I may have to defer to, through the chair, Representative Eastman. I think these are going to be new positions because currently right now the commission is suffering from a lack of people with skilled in the skilled profession areas, whether it's engineers or such, that they'll be looking for new personnel and probably could be swapping out people.
And
it's cost neutral from what I understand.
It's intended to be cost neutral. It means they'll have to do some shuffling with their funding, but there's a general recognition, and I think that Ms. O'Connor may be able to speak to this. There's a sense that a lot of the technical expertise at RCA is getting lost. They get trained up at RCA over a period of a year or two, and then they get hired by industry at a much higher salary. And so the goal is to require RCA to reshuffle some of their budget so they can raise salaries for people that have that expertise so they can provide that expertise to the commission. But Ms. O'Connor may be the better one to respond to that question. Or we may be able to hear from Mr. Pickett on that as well. Ms. O'Connor, to the extent you have knowledge, go ahead. And I do see Mr. Pickett, Bob Pickett from the Regulatory Commission is online. He may be better able to address that. Ms. O'Connor, can you answer that?
Thank you, Chair Klayman. I can add just my own personal observations over almost 20 years from industry interacting with the commission. They have lost staff routinely. It's difficult, and I believe it's difficult to recruit staff. And it's not just a telecommunications problem. Industries are incredibly intricate and detailed. The technology is advancing in every field, so it's important. We would appreciate as much expertise as possible when we are before the commission. So generally, we think this is fine. It would be good. We would support the commission in it.
Let me see. Mr. Pickett, can you hear us? Bob Pickett is on, Commissioner. Mr. Pickett, can you hear us?
Wait a minute. I can hear you.
Did you hear Representative Eastman's question and the question about this addition to the bill that would allow some exempt employees? Can you address the question that Representative Eastman has brought up?
Yes, I will attempt to address that. This amendment just came through on Saturday afternoon, and you know we're pleased to have the ability to have a little bit more flexibility with totally exempt positions. That is totally clear. because as Ms. O'Connor has stated and in numerous other settings, including our chairman, we've had a difficult time holding on to highly technical, skilled staff at the commission. And I would say that's been true, you know, throughout the 12 years I've been at the commission. Exactly how those positions will be allocated, it may be a combination of things. We may have some new positions developed and staffed in a way that is very different than what has traditionally happened at the commission, and that could entail, you know, trying to hold on to a couple of key staff people, but it will definitely entail bringing some new people in from outside that have skill sets that we haven't seen before.
Representative Eastman, follow-up. Mr. Pickett, did you identify yourself at the beginning?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Commissioner Bob Pickett with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
I thought he'd done that, and you're right, Representative Thompson. Thank you for that reminder. Follow-up question, Representative Eastman, for
thank you.
Commissioner Pickett.
Through the chair. Commissioner Pickett, I'm curious, the five individuals that we're talking about now, does the commission set those salaries or they set some other way?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, they'll have to be pegged to what the actual market is. And so we have not had, as I said, time to really look at the specific description of what the positions will be, let alone peg it to what the marketplace is.
Well,
we'll be doing that in consultation. Obviously, we have to look at the benchmarks of other state classified positions, but what we found is, for the most part, there aren't real good comparisons.
Follow-up, Representative Eastman.
Thank you to the chair. And if the five positions are approved in the very near future, what sort of timeline are we looking at to bring these folks on or convert those positions?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that's really difficult to say right now. As you're probably well aware, we have another number of very major proceedings before the commission. And so, you know, to commit to say we're going to do it in the next 6 to 9 months is probably not realistic, but the process will start, and it's not the type of thing I think you'd try to bring all five on. We'd have to look at where the area of greatest need is right now and focus on that, so I think you'd see sort of a rolling out over a period of time.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. So for the five that you anticipate hiring at some point, could you briefly just describe their role? Are these just going to be serving basically as advisors for the commission, or how would that play out?
They will be advisors, technical policy advisors, primarily for the commission in our decision-making process, but, you know, they'll also be called in to, say, rulemaking dockets that we have. And we have to get, you know, we have an annual RCC process. And, you know, even if the positions are authorized, we have to figure out how they're, we don't get general funds. And so on an annual basis, we'll have to figure out, looking at the rest of the operation of the commission, how we're going to plug it in. Because we have a statutory cap on how much we can charge with RCCs, as does RAPA. And so we'll look at the vacant positions, ones that, you know, say we have not been able to fill, and, you know, focus on those probably initially, and, you know, get a new position description and a salary pegged to that. So it's going to be a very involved process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for Commissioner Pickett? I don't see any others. A couple of other people that are available. Stuart Goring from the Department of Law, Jimmy Jackson, the general counsel in-house counsel for GCI, and we may be able to get Heather Kavanaugh from Director of Corporate Communications at Alaska Communication Systems, Sean Ushman, Director of External Affairs of Alaska with AT&T, Rick Hitt, Vice President of Regulatory Economics and Finance at GCI. They may all be available if people have questions for them. And I'm not seeing any with questions, so I think what we want to do is get to the public hearing. What was that beep?
Shut off.
So we are going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 83. First, I will ask if there was anyone here in the room who would like to testify on Senate Bill 83. I don't see anybody on the list. Okay. Representative Christ Tompkins, it looks like you want to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's our usual custom, as you know, to limit public testimony to 2 minutes, but given that you're a member of this body, I'm going to relax those rules for your testimony.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm providing this testimony, given the short turnaround and the inability for a couple of my constituents to be able to testify today. I know they would prefer to be providing this, and I know I would, but I have written testimony. First, I want to thank Christine O'Connor for her information and answering questions, and I'm convinced many aspects of this bill are positive. However, this bill is moving very, very quickly through the legislature, through this committee, through the previous committee, and I'm not fully confident on the impact of this bill vis-a-vis landline service. And part of the reason I'm particularly attuned and aware of landline regulation is it has been an issue in rural communities in my district for all 7 years that I've served in the legislature. So it is important to put on the record the difficulties that some rural communities are contending with in terms of landline service. And there are three communities in particular that I want to speak to, Edna Bay, Kaufman Cove, and Thorn Bay, that have had difficulty sustaining landline service. These communities, for the most part, don't have cell phone service, so landline service is the only means of phone communication these communities have, and it also, therefore, becomes a life safety issue as well as a commerce issue. If you don't have landline service, you can't maintain a business. You can't call 911. You can't get an ambulance or get medical attention. There is difficulty in all communities. Speaking to Edna Bay, the phone company there, and this is from the city clerk, quote, provides phone service to select households in our city via a limited group of hardline phones and a 900 megahertz wireless system that they installed around 2008. The new wireless system has not performed as well as the system it replaced, and resulted in less availability of service restricted only to select households. The hardline system only reaches the first few households on the main road. New residents have come to me informed that that phone company has declined them service, stating they are no longer offering any new service to residents of Edna Bay. However, after our city and residents have made repeated attempts to reach out for improved service availability and received no inclination that they will work to help us, it has felt like we're left with a community running out of time. Without critical phone infrastructure being available to new and existing residents, it creates a safety issue reaching out to residents during natural disaster events like the tsunami warnings we just had, and impedes the future viability of our town. So there are similar anecdotes from other communities that I represent. I take this very seriously, and I've been in communication up to the CEO of the phone companies, as well as Ms. O'Connor through the years, and I really appreciate the responsiveness, yet the situation hasn't changed. I fully realize that this bill may not directly affect the ability of residents, like the resident I just quoted, to be able to get service. But clearly there's a lot going on in this bill, and there is, I think, sort of a basic level of communication that residents should be able to have that is not being afforded at present. And to be clear, this is residents moving to communities, not existing residents having service discontinued, which, as I gather in statute, is a nuanced but important difference. So I feel compelled to put on the record that there is a problem, particularly in rural communities, with landline service. I appreciate much of what this bill is doing, but certainly my obligation to register those concerns for my district, especially given the short turnaround and inability for my constituents to testify in this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins. I would encourage your constituents to email, or if your office has the testimony, you can forward it to my office, and we'll make sure that gets included within the public testimony record for this bill.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. I will make sure that happens.
Any questions for Representative Christ Tompkins? I don't see any. Thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on Senate Bill 83? Hearing and seeing no one, looking on the online connection, there are a couple of people that we haven't heard from that are here for questions, but they're not here for public testimony. So with that, I'm going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 83. We had put out a request to the committee that if there are any amendments that are wanted on Senate Bill 83 to let my office know, and they were due at noon today. We did not receive any amendments to Senate Bill 83, so there's no amendments to take up. It is my intention to actually take this bill up and move it out of committee today, but I know a couple of members are out at a couple of other meetings, and so what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to recess to the call of the chair. I would ask folks to stand by for about 5 minutes to see if we can get them here within 5 minutes. If we can't get them here in 5 minutes, then it'll be a little bit later, and if I could really predict that with confidence, I would tell you that, but we'll go off record, and Representative Eastman, we can talk about your query when we're off record, but we're off record for now, at ease. We're back on record. I have, after a brief inquiry, I have been reassured that we do not need anyone else from the committee to be here, so
go ahead.
Representative Shaw, could I have a motion? Actually, but yeah, go ahead and have the motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have a motion to move Senate Bill 83. I move version 31-LS0563/U of Senate Bill 83 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
I note there are no amendments. Is there any objection to moving? Representative Kopp has arrived, and Representative Wool has arrived, and I gather they have no objections. Does anyone? I will ask before we actually take that up. Does anyone want to make any comments on this bill before we move it?
This is an excellent bill.
Representative Kopp, thank you very much. Hearing and seeing no comments, I hear no objection to House Bill 83. So Senate Bill 83 moves from committee. Please stand by afterwards to sign the paperwork. And with that, we will adjourn for the day. We stand adjourned. It is 1:55 p.m. And Senator Birch.
I did the same. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're all confused.
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank you and your staff and committee members for hearing this on an accelerated basis and for getting us moving this along. And I would note to the concerns that were voiced about inadequate public engagement. We just had four hearings in the last committee, and this bill has been in process for 2 years. So there's been ample opportunity, but we're certainly welcome and open for any communications. But I just want to extend our thank you, Kim Skipper in my office, and others that have been helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Birch. All right. Anybody else want to say anything before I gavel us out? Going once, going twice. We are adjourned.